you like games, comedy, middle-aged men, and half an hour, then you'll like this. It's the Second Funniest Podcast with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Justin Worsham. Fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. This is episode 510. With me, as always, is the man who set the bar for being middle-aged.
What?
Whatever age he is, it is always the middle of his life.
What?
For he is immortal in our hearts and in our souls. The one, the only, the KevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
I am not middle-aged. Justin Worsham.
Am I middle-aged? It's because I have gray hair?
No, middle-aged.
Or is it because Sam is 12?
Yeah, that's it. Because middle-aged is like 40, right? I mean, I get it. We're not.
No, it's 50.
We're not young, sexy men. Although I think we are.
Yeah.
Do I sound like I wear a sweater vest?
This really sounds like adult entertainment music right now. Where do you get these riffs, Sam? I sure hope you don't make them. Because if you do, you can make a lot of money in the adult entertainment industry.
Nice save. Because I love them. We have a great episode. Another two-parter. And I really, I know that I said this a long time ago when we were talking to Matt Kramer. But it just... this is probably a conversation we should be having off the mic. But what I'm going to say is that I just really am falling in love with being able to talk to people that are unbelievably passionate about what they do. And they're also talking, it's a weird thing on our end, is that they're talking about something that is a passionate hobby that we have.
Yeah.
That's
a good point. Yeah, but I think we spend a lot of time talking about people who are passionate about games, mm-hmm. and now we get a chance to talk to people who are passionate about making games.
Yeah, and I really,
Listen to the interview.
And button. But as you saw in the description, we're talking to Chris McGovern, Travis Howe, and Matt Crewley. Did I say his name right? Crewley, yes. Matt, Will Crewley.
Real. I was like,
where did I get Matt from?
I don't know. I was like, where is he looking?
I'm a douche. but anyway, these guys were animators on Sly 4, Thieves in Time. And as you'll hear in the episode, we broke it into two parts. So this is part one. And we're going to hear them talk about working on Sly and all that stuff. And then coming up in part two that we'll release next week, where they're going to talk about how they got into animation and what I think is a gem of next week, if I can tease
that. Well, let's tease that after they hear
you
this.
Tease that after that? Yeah. All right. Well, here is our interview with Matt Will Crewley.
Wow.
I say his name again and he's like, I'm just busting his balls.
He's not here.
He's the junior animator. Who gives a crap? Come on, rookie. He's like one step above an intern. And hopefully he's laughing at this right now.
I hope so.
But anyway, Chris McGovern, Travis Howe, and Will Crewley, animators for Sly 4 Thieves in Time. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. This is episode 510. We are here with many an animator on your favorite series. I don't know. Here's where I am ignorant.
Yes.
And maybe our wonderful people on the phone with us or via Skype, I guess, is a better way of saying
because
it.
Because it's 2013.
Yep. Nobody uses phones anymore. Come on. Do you think... Well, let's not get on that tangent, Justin.
Stay here.
Back on the rails, son. Back on the rails. Do these guys, did they work on the whole game?
Ah.
Did they? Or you want me to ask them?
Let's find out. We'll find out.
So you guys worked, let's first introduce yourselves by voice so that people can then hear you from here on out.
I guess I'll start. Yeah. My name is Chris McGovern.
And what did you do?
Sorry, go, Chris.
There are ninjas in the room.
They're under attack. Somebody find their address. Trace the call. If we only use phones, we can trace the call.
Can't do it. We're
Skyping. Damn you, Skype. Damn you. Their gifts will never be seen again. If only they learned to fight ninjutsu the way they animated it.
Chris, what were you on the title, on Sly?
I was an animator.
Just an animator. Just an animator.
Just a man with a talent that most of the world doesn't have.
Animator.
Character animator.
Awesome animator.
Yeah.
There it is.
For the ladies.
And who else do we have?
If I can add to this, though, specifically, you were a player character animator who also did pretty much everything else. Like, we have specific things. Will and I have specific things that we did. But with Chris, he kind of jumped between pretty much everything. He did players, he did enemies, he did cinematics, he swept floors. Literally everything you could do on this project.
Yes.
Yes.
Great. All right, so we got Chris. Who's next?
So I'm Travis.
Hi, Travis.
Howe. I don't know why we're using our last names. My name is Travis Howe, and I'm also a character animator. I did specifically player character stuff. I was in charge of Sly himself for anything that's in-game animation outside of cinematics. And then Bentley and a lot of Murray, which somebody in this room who is named Chris McGovern stole from me.
Oh. I had to take over and clean up his stuff.
Oh. Oh, cat fight, meow.
No more cuddling.
I'm gonna kill him after this. And then toward the end, I started doing cinematics. But yeah, for the most part, I was doing player character stuff.
Right on. And then there's Will as well.
Yes, just Will, like Madonna. There's only one.
Awesome.
But yeah, I was actually a junior animator on Sly. It was my first game. First experience as an animator.
Way to go, Will.
Yeah, all right.
And what a game to be my first.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm super spoiled. But yeah, I was in charge mostly of the AI characters, the enemies and stuff towards the end of the game. And a lot of cinematics in a short amount of time. And,
yes.
Yeah. And I dabbled with a little bit of player characters.
So let's launch it to
very,
my first.
Very little.
It's probably for the better. let's launch it to my first question. Did you guys work on the whole series, or Sly 4, or Sly 5?
Good bait.
That's only funny because you guys didn't hear the conversation where we had to make sure that there wasn't anything that we would lead them down to say, and we're like, no, we got it. Don't even worry about it. We won't set you up. It's going to be super easy, and then I bait you into saying whether or not there's a Sly 5.
So is there?
So seriously, though.
Seriously, is there a Sly 5?
But I worked on Sly 5. Oh, damn.
Oh,
no.
Oh, fired.
NDA broke.
So did you guys work on the whole series?
No, just Sly 4 or These in Time.
Got it.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's true of all the animators on the project, that none of the animators had worked on any of the previous games.
Which
was kind of an interesting challenge for us to sort of pick up the mantle and try and match the style that none of us had actually done previously. Was pretty challenging.
Yeah, what are the challenges of that?
Sorry,
what was that?
What are the challenges? Like, how do you go about doing that?
Well, one thing in particular was, you know, the previous games came out on a previous system, and unfortunately, the animation, I mean, the animation was beautiful on those games, but our rigs have gotten much more complicated, and we can do a lot more.
Pause. You have to define rig.
He means a semi,
right?
Kevin.
Exactly.
He's talking about a Peterbilt that he's cruising down the 99 with.
We're using technical.
He's eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. He's got a long way to go and a short time to get there. He's got beer in Texarkana. The folks are thirsty in Atlanta.
How long is this song?
We all had to get our Class A licenses before we. By rig, specifically, what I'm talking about is think of it in terms of stop motion animation, which most people can associate with this. That in stop motion animation, you don't just have a lump of clay that you're moving around. There's actually an armature underneath that, which is essentially just a bunch of joints and hinges that allow you to rotate everything. In CG animation, it's the same. You basically have an armature underneath the character that allows you to rotate at the point where the elbow is or at the point where the fingers are. And so it allows us to, animate the character.
But for you guys, it's all, as opposed to a claymation situation, you guys, it's all digital-based, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's all inside of the computer. But I'm still answering questions to my family about how I draw it all inside of the computer.
Now, do you all develop the rigs, or are you simply the folks that take those rigs and then put them to life?
It depends on the studio. Here, specifically, we had riggers.
Rigger.
That were rigger, yes. JF Lapine, that was doing the building the rigs for us, and then we were specifically just animating them. And then complaining about the rigs and getting changes made to them.
That's half an animator's job, is complaining about stuff.
Are you the divas in the industry, or are you the talent that everybody has to, oh, here come the animators?
Let me put it this way. I don't think any other department ever fussed with the air conditioning in the building.
That's fine. We need perfect working conditions. Yeah.
It's cold in here. Are you cold? I actually have a blanket at my desk.
I can't animate straight.
I need warmth.
We were referred to as the animators, though, especially our specific little group. We
weirdly, considering what we did for a living.
Yeah. For months, I was like, why are they calling
is that what I do?
I keep having this flash in my head of you guys coming around some cubicle corner and hearing dun, 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 walking slow motion.
Every morning.
That's the animators,
we'd
guys.
Get oatmeal, and every morning there'd be some kind of music blaring behind.
Here's, you know, what's kind of sad about that is I know that there's a movie that that's from, that there's the slow motion whole crowd, but immediately my mind goes to the same place I'm sure yours did, is Monsters Incorporated.
Right, yeah.
Monsters Incorporated, where they walk in, which is actually an homage to something else.
Right, dude, that's funny. Other movies.
Well, before I forget then, we had Nate Fox on the show a long time ago, and he talked about how much effort and work was put into designing the animation of Sly's tail. Now, was that something that you guys got to go to Sucker Punch and say, hey, because you're the animators, you guys go in slow motion, dun, 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 and you hold the place up and say, we're turning down the AC unless you give us the algorithm for that tail animation. Or is it something where they made you reinvent the wheel as some kind of weird, unnecessary, expensive hazing?
To tell you the truth, I'm actually not sure who even did the tail. I don't actually know.
It is an algorithm.
But I'm not sure. Yeah. They had that actually worked out by the time we got there.
Oh, okay.
That being said, we certainly would have gone to Sucker Punch and not... No, I'm just kidding.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, I guess what my... I know that there is, no bad blood between Sanzuru and and Sucker Punch, but... Is that usual when, if you're taking over a franchise and you're a new development team, is it couth to be able to call over and say, hey, how did you animate that tail? Or is that kind of don't do that. That's awkward.
You know, I can imagine that usually that is the case, that usually it would be awkward and uncomfortable. And if the studio that had the original property is making it uncomfortable for you, I can imagine that, the product turns out pretty bad, but maybe that's part of the reason why Sly worked so well.
We had a lot of support, I think.
Yeah, Sucker Punch was really cool, yeah.
The only thing I ever specifically heard from them about the animation, though, was they came in one time to look at the project, and they were like, I just remember them saying, oh, this is bleeping awesome animation. That's pretty much all I ever got from them. I'm like, well, that's good. I guess we're going the right direction.
And that makes us smile, yes.
And how we have three of you here. How many animators were on Sly?
There were, counting Kotaro, who came on toward the end, there were 10?
10? 10 in all,
And would that be a small team or a large team?
That's a pretty, that's a fairly large team given the project. Yeah. But I mean, considering the fact that this animation or this game was very animation heavy and very, the animation was very important to this game because of the style. I imagine that's probably about standard. Where I'm at currently, we actually have a smaller animation team and a much larger studio. So I think that must be a pretty good-sized team.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about this when we have guys like you on the show. Is there anything were you guys fans of the series beforehand?
Chris is going to answer this question.
I had heard of it. I definitely did my homework once I knew I was going to be working at the studio. I played through all of the games and all that. So
that's why Chris is going to answer it. I'm going to have to drop a bombshell here.
Oh, no.
I have only played the second one.
Oh, well, that's not too bad.
Yeah, why is that?
That's I thought you were going to say, yes. I don't even know what Sly Cooper is.
In charge of Sly himself. Yeah, I imagine the people, well,
Let's talk about that though for a minute, because the reality is that our culture has become so inundated, and this is a subject that I feel like recently I've gotten on a soapbox on our show about, is that our society has become so inundated with nerd rage that you poor guys have to feel like you've done something. Like your reaction was the same as, we chose between two children as to which one would live. We made Sophie's choice, and that's what we had to do. And I'm sorry for it, but I had to do what had to be done. When it's like, why is it that I don't, like, I get it. I'm not judging that part of it. I'm judging the part that it makes, why is it that we feel like, oh, it's so disrespectful if I don't know what it is before I did an amazing job animating this franchise that you all really, really love?
Chris and I were actually talking about something similar to this on the way here, that we were talking about how we'll see, you know, comments and stuff from people. Even before the game came out, we were, you know, we were always following comments and seeing what people thought and everything. And there were a lot of comments that said things like, for example, I imagine that they are going to have all the ancestors. And if they don't have all the ancestors, then they're totally screwing this game up.
Right.
And, which is completely absurd. Like, we could have all the ancestors. It'd just be very short little vignettes for each of them. Right. We would be able to have, like, all of them in there. But, you know, I think this project, more than, for myself at least, more than any project I've worked on before, taught me not to wear my heart on my sleeve. Because it has such a rabid following, which is good. Like, people were so excited about Sly and they just loved the project. And when we went to E3, people were coming up to us and going crazy about it, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But you also get the other side of that, of people that really are upset if they feel like it's even slightly off. Like, a particular reporter, I don't know what you call him, who's on. Oh, damn it.
I often use the word douche.
There you go. You can cut it out if you feel like you need to.
Can I throw out the word douche? Would that work? Is that?
Yes, perfect.
All right.
He was extremely unhappy with the game and gave us like a 2 out of 5 or something. And, you know, for me, by that point, I'd already kind of learned we're not going to please everybody. I was really disappointed because I wanted him to like it because I knew he was a Sly fan. But at the same time, I thought his rating was absurd. Like, 2 out of 5 is, like, I worked on Golden Axe, and that got a 45%, which is higher than 2 out of 5. Yeah. Golden Axe. That was,
well, I remember.
You Golden Axe, right?
Yes.
Beast Rider.
I remember that was for this first Sega system, right? Or was it on the Genesis?
Oh, no. This was Beast Rider. This was
Got it.
We're still this generation.
You're talking about
PS360.
The new one.
I am yet an infant.
I was going to say, how long have you been animating? I had a guy once send me an email on our Facebook page that said, please, can you tell Sanzuru that Sly's face is wrong? There's still time to fix it. Please, please, please.
Face.
I was like, and his face looks fine. I don't know what your problem is.
You know what's funny about the face, and I guess we can discuss this and decide whether this needs to be cut out.
I'm marking the time.
His face was changed halfway through the project, actually. Like, originally, it was a different shape, and then they changed it. And once they changed it, then I was on the side of people that were complaining about the face. I was like, I see it now. This does look better. Like, he used to, remember, because the cheeks, like, went in and then down.
Mm-hmm. We're making.
Yeah, we're making.
I'm making jokes. I keep forgetting I'm not on camera. I'm used to.
Please take pictures of all of this. I can't wait to see.
Well, and it really does frustrate me that while I can understand, like, this is where I can, as much as I love nerds and I love being a nerd, this is where I feel like I'm not completely jumped into the gang, if you would, because as much as everybody likes to...
Is that an expression? I'm not familiar with that one.
But as much as, like, everybody hates the original or the new trilogy of Star Wars, like, and I don't like them, you know what I mean? But to have this visceral hate for them, that's a part that I really don't understand. Now, I hope I'm not making you guys into hypocrites where you're about to jump on this tirade about how horrible they are, but my point is...
No, we actually have long discussions about how there was such potential there.
Right.
And yeah. If you just changed a few things, you know, man, you could have a good movie.
Exactly.
And actually, there was a video going around.
Yeah.
We were all excited about that. There was a guy that said with a few subtle changes, you could fix episode one.
Yeah. He has them re-edited.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, not just good, but awesome.
Yeah.
Somebody re-edited them and put them online and, like, edited out Jar Jar Binks and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's an improvement already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right all right. There, well, that's our episode. Thanks, guys. Goodbye. I'm gonna go find this on Google, and I know what I'm doing for the rest of the
but
next
But to me,
hour.
I just feel like, and maybe it's a part that makes me not a complete nerd, because I do. I feel like it means I have to tear up my nerd card, is that the alternative is to not have it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly, yeah.
Like, why can't it, why, what, that's the part of the nerd brain I don't understand, that why can't you just look at it and go, holy crap, somebody else is picking up the ball for Sucker Punch and it's going to make this game that I truly, truly love. And it does have a humongous following. I mean, I have been able to, I'm not a part of it, but I get to see it from the outside through co-hosting the show with Kevin. But when the game was announced and then it kind of blew up our podcast, and then now I have like friends all over my PSN network because we give out our gamer tags. And it, when the game comes out, I went over just out of curiosity. I had something like 40 or 50 friends online, and I just scrolled down and every single one of them was playing Sly Thieves in Time. And it's all because they love the show, but it was just an interesting thing for me to be able to see. And then now I start noticing that every single one of their gamer tags has some reference to Sly.
Or they have a Sly avatar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, even the guys that have it has nothing to do with, like, Death Raider 4000 as a Bentley, which I think is hilarious.
So would Bentley.
So it's just, it is interesting to me, and I think it's funny that you guys have almost been victims of this, and I'm glad that it came out where you're like, we just have to let it go because there's nothing we could do. But it's so funny to me that people complain about the face. Was there anything else? And tell me if this is territory I shouldn't lead you down, but was there anything else that was like, man, these guys are really hassling about this and we're just trying to do our job?
Well, the big thing is like, you know, I could see why people could get upset about, you know, messing up Sly, but, you know, and because we've all heard of games where, like, they just made it to make it, but, yeah. I mean, everybody knows, and you heard Matt talk about it, and you've heard, from the get-go of talking about Thieves in Time, that, like, Sanzaru loved Sly, and this was, like, totally a love thing, you know, and they really took their time making it the best it could be, and that was always, you know, the message from the get-go. And it's a humongous game. And the one thing that, like, I've kind of been upset about, but these guys I don't think are as upset about it and understand the review, is the load time thing.
Yeah.
Like, these are gigantic worlds.
Yeah.
On a PS3.
Or a Vita.
Or a Vita, yeah. Like,
have it in your hand.
Yeah. Like, oh my goodness, man. Like, thinking about, like, on PS2 and stuff, you know, like, compared to, like, what this has and the amount, like, there's just so much, you know, and we'd have to go work on these scenes and it would take forever just to load them up on our computer because the worlds are just huge and these were, like, proxy models of it, you know?
Yeah.
And
incredibly
so it's
detailed.
Gonna take some time to load and I don't know. That was the one thing that really kind of irked me was, like, I get it, but, like, and it is pretty long load times, but.
No, but, you know, time is relative.
Now that I think about it, it actually does upset me, too.
Stupid low time. But time is relative. You know, I keep my PS2 at work, and I'll pop in a DVD or something, and that thing will take nearly a solid minute before I can actually press play on the DVD because it's booting up all of its drive and then it's reading the disc and it's going through all these menus, and it takes forever. And now, you know, it takes 20 seconds or 15 seconds for the load screen to launch and Sly, and we want to break our controllers in half. So we've abandoned, like, we forget how far we've come because it all becomes relative.
You know, this your statement, Will, made me realize that what you guys do and people in the gaming industry is the nerd equivalent of a server. And here's my point.
Go on.
My point is that everybody who has ever waited tables has always said everyone should wait tables at least once in their life. It should be like the Israeli army. That's what it should be. I feel like if you are decide
interesting
that,
choice
in that, what I'm saying is if you decide that you want to put comic books in bags and boards, like if you just come up to that on your own, then that means that you are drafted into some kind of intern position where you get to see a game being made from beginning to end and watch the amount of work that goes into it. Because I'm realizing through you guys describing this that really it's not the nerd culture that's doing this. It's the ignorance to the process. That's mm-hmm. really all it is. Yeah. And that has also given me the ideas that I kind of want that to be a part of the mission statement of this podcast, is I want to be able to educate our listeners on the way that their games that they love are made and the blood, sweat, and tears and just exhaustive hours that are poured into this thing for them to play in 12 hours and then be like, oh, it's all right, but it's face stood up at the cheeks and I didn't like it.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? Especially like for me, because this is my first game, you know, working on a game. And like, I mean, I went out with, you know, I appreciated the process, but man, like, yeah, you know, you can't believe the process that goes into this. And now when I play games, like, man, I'm just like, I can, you appreciate so much more, like, level design. Man, like, I had no idea how much work went into level design. I had no idea how much went into like getting the textures right and getting everything working, you know, and all the bugs fixed and stuff. I had no idea. And you know, you appreciate so much more playing a game now and just seeing the amount of stuff that goes into it.
And how many hours did each of you do you think that you applied to the game?
Will worked a 10-hour week, but
but he did that every day. So
all of us worked. I mean, just I would say we didn't have to crunch too much. Yeah, like, not too often. Bad. Like I guess like, toward the end, we kind of did.
Yeah, it was maybe like 2 extra hours per day, like during crunch times.
Yeah, well, the worst time, and I don't even know if we can talk about the process necessarily how much, but
go like, for it.
Do but, it. We'll edit it. It came down to we had like. Like just a couple months left, and we had like 2 hours of cinematics to do, and like game animators animate pretty fast. So if we were doing a cinematic, I'd say like we could do like what like 3 minutes a week, maybe. Yeah. But and that's like if you were doing a movie, you'd get like maybe 30 seconds a minute, you know, a week, you know.
So well, but that's why we had Chris though.
Yeah,
because well, he did one of those 2 hours.
Yeah,
with sock puppets and a camera, but it still turned out good.
Yeah.
I noticed that the face was wrong.
Yeah, but other than that.
Actually, something I did want to say, going back to that subject that you mentioned, Justin, about people after the game comes out, you know, they just. It's like they don't even realize that the people that made the game read their comments, or maybe they do, and they're just complete.
Wish they did, but they don't know.
I remember I read one comment. This was after the game had shipped. Somebody said, they said it as though they were trying to sound very, you know, diplomatic, and they were like, you know, the game, I just felt that it was very obvious that they just wanted to cash in on the product. And, you know, they didn't put any work into this. It's clear that they just rushed this out last minute and, you know, the game just shows. And
they were talking about this game?
Yeah, and they were talking about this game. And I was like, I don't think you're playing the same game I'm playing. Cause
I think they're playing Modern Warfare 3.
I mean, that's I joked fun. Before about you know, being an infant in the industry, but I've been around for a while. I've worked on 9 projects. I've shipped 6. And of those 6 projects, this is the first one that I would go out and buy myself. Nice. In fact, Chris, you did go out and buy it.
I did.
They didn't have copies for you? Wow. I even got the copy, and I worked like 2 hours on the game.
Well, you eventually
not got helping.
I didn't get a copy.
No. Justin actually got a copy.
I'll buy you guys copies.
We have a dispensary here, actually.
We're like a radio station. We've just been giving them out for weeks.
Since 2012, actually. Yeah, it's really weird.
June of 2012.
Before the game.
Well, yeah, it is really. And what I want to do is I want to go back a little bit because there's a part of you that I want to jump back. And if we need to jump back to Sly, I would love to. But I would love to be able to hear each of your stories and how you got into anime. Well, I had one quick question before we get into that. Have you guys mentioned the difference between video games and film? Can you touch on that? How is it different to do a game versus? Because I think I just heard you say that you would spend a week to do 30 seconds to a minute of an animated film. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of differences. I would say that the biggest similarity between the two, obviously, is, I mean, at the end of the day, you want to get, you know, you have a deadline, you know. The biggest difference between the two, honestly, is just the amount of time that you have for a shot. I always compare it to working in game animation is like filling up a sketchbook. And working in film animation is like working on a oil painting. You know, one of them, it's all about the speed and it's all about expressing yourself really quickly and getting a lot of work done. And the other, you have more time, but you have to take that time to really polish and make sure that every little thing is perfect.
Mm. Yeah, like they're worrying about, you know, films really worrying about all the fingers and like, you know, I remember another animator, none of us have actually worked in film, but one of the other animators that was with us, David Edwards, awesome animator.
He's all right.
Yeah.
Oh, he's listening. He is so
we actually have him on the line.
David, would you like to acknowledge that comment?
But he worked on the last Alvin and the Chipmunks movie, and he was telling me how like they'd be in dailies, which is like, you know, when they review their shots and stuff, and they'd be like, yeah, you got to work on the first part of the index finger on frame 19 through 31. Wow. Just really get the overlap working on that. You know, it's like they're the real painstaking like details, you know,
because every frame has to be perfect.
In this particular project where I felt like I wanted to get that detail, because at the end of the day, after the project is over, we have to also show what we've done, you know, and I for one just like feeling really proud of the stuff that I've done. Sure. And there were specific shots that I would do that I would get into that like fussy. I remember Sly's spinning death. When he falls, his arm is like pointed up. I keep acting it out. See, it's at kind of this angle right here. You know?
Okay. I see it in my mind's eye.
When he falls, I actually tracked his finger so that it followed the arc of the motion, and I don't think that actually matters in game.
Yeah,
it gets compressed out.
All those reviews you hear about all the cool little details that you see in animation, that was usually Travis. Travis would go back. I remember towards the end, he would just be spending hours just getting little things on Sly, especially, you know, like getting his cheeks, you know, overlapping and moving, and it totally added, you know, you could totally see it and feel it in Sly, and it was cool little things like that that really made it cool.
Well, the animation overall that I did sucked, but I really got good cheeks in there, because after the face complaints, I knew that it mattered.
That's the only thing that matters.
That's all they care about.
They care about the cheeks.
Before we get more about your personal stories, I did want to say that, Travis, I saw earlier on Facebook, you've changed your profile picture to the green square. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what's going on in the world? And we won't cut you off in the middle of it and go to commercial. They get that, and so will you, Justin, in a moment.
Okay.
Essentially, the visual effects
we're of course referencing the Oscars, where somebody tried to mention this and then they got played off.
I remember that. And they were the only ones of the night, if I remember correctly.
They got fully played off.
Yeah, and cut the mic, too.
Yeah, killed them.
Yeah, they cut the mic.
Even Tarantino got to turn around and do a second speech in his drunken haze.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, for reals, go on.
Now Will's going to be doing the Jaws thing.
Essentially,
the visual effects industry and the game industry are very well connected, very tied. And as Will has already mentioned, David Edwards and a couple of the other animators have worked in film before. Mike Midlock actually was jumping between. He was a contractor here. Oh, 11 animators, because we weren't counting.
Yes.
So 11 animators. He was jumping between this, and after his contract was over, he would go over to ILM and work for a while, then come back here and work for us for a while.
Wow.
On the Avengers.
On the Avengers, yeah. Wow. And then ultimately, he's now on Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
If I remember right. But the, anyway, the two industries are very interconnected, and it's really one big family. We all go to the same barbecues, you know, and
literally,
we really do go to the same barbecues. And the visual effects industry has really been suffering lately due to things that, you know, it's essentially, it comes down to finances and it comes down to business practices. But the you guys are being very distracting with your drinks right now. I'm trying to say something serious.
Go. I'm crying.
They're doing the visual equivalent of Jaws to me right now.
Dumb, huh?
But essentially, and to explain a little bit more clearly, at the Academy Awards, was that last night? Was that the night before?
No,
I guess it was the night before.
Yeah.
So at the Academy Awards, they awarded the Oscar for Best Visual Effects to Ang Lee's Life of Pi,
right?
Which most of the effects were done by a place called Rhythm and Hughes. Rhythm and Hughes has recently had to file for bankruptcy and let go of most of its employees. And in fact, Rhythm and Hughes is where David Edwards was working.
On the Chipmunks.
And they have done nothing but stellar work. They're, in fact, they do like Life of Pi, which you sort of expect them to do an awesome job. But then they did Yogi Bear, which you don't really necessarily expect them to have to feel like they have to nail it out of the park, and they totally did.
It looked great.
Really beautifully animated.
Yeah.
And, it's just basically what people are so angry about, what the green labels are for, is the green label represents what your favorite film would look like without visual effects. Look at the list of, the top grossing movies of all time. And in that list, every single one of them is visual effects heavy. I think the top grossing films of this past year, or this, maybe it was this Academy Awards, whatever, season, every single one of them was effects heavy. And we're even including, Skyfall in that, which probably most people don't realize. It's an extremely effects heavy movie. Fast and the Furious, most of the time, they're editing in the backgrounds. Every single one of these movies requires a ton of visual effects. And, it's a crime to see a movie like Life of Pi make over $500 million. And then the studio that is responsible for those beautiful effects gets closed down.
Right.
Yeah, and they don't get residuals. That's the big problem, is that we're in this market where, there's a lot of outsourcing, and companies over here are underbidding, trying to get contracts, because that's what they work off of. They work off of contracts. And, so they're just making it by, with every contract they get. So if it comes up and they don't get their next contract, like, they have to lay off everybody. Well, and they're done.
Part of that, like, the contracting is, they're literally, at this point, because, the studios are going, screw it, we'll send it overseas then if we have to, we'll get work somewhere else if you guys aren't willing to do this bid. So, like, Rhythm and Hughes, for example, had to take these extremely low bids just so they would get the work.
Yeah.
And that's not paying their employees well. That's just scraping by. Yeah. Not making a profit out of it. That's just surviving to the next paycheck, essentially.
So this movement on Facebook is to just create awareness, or is there something we can do? What can we demand that movies pay fair wages?
Yeah,
can I pay more for my ticket price?
That's
how can I help?
Kevin just pulled up the all-time box office in the USA, and you have to go all the way down to number 21, which is The Passion of the Christ, before you have a non-special effects or animated movie.
And Passion of Christ had a lot of effects.
It did?
Oh, yeah. Star Wars from 1977.
Jurassic Park is right after Passion of the Christ, and then comes Transformers, Dark Side of the Moon.
Jurassic Park had no effects.
Right, exactly.
They were real dinosaurs.
They grew them from amber mosquito blood. Yeah, I saw the movie.
I love that. I love in the credits it says Phil Tippett, dinosaur wrangler or something. People send out that image saying, "What were you doing, Phil? You had one job."
That's awesome. I missed that. That's funny.
Yeah, out of the list, out of the top 10, the only two that don't have current special effects are Star Wars, the 1977 release. It's number 6 at $460 million. And then E.T. was number 9 in 1982 with $434 million. The rest of them are like Shark.
And that's just USA.
That's just USA,
money.
Yeah.
It's that's not DVD sales. That's just box office money.
Yeah. The number one, of course, being Avatar.
It's interesting, the two movies that you mentioned, because actually they do have current special effects because of the fact that
that's true.
Directors can't let them go.
That's true. So, that's fair.
They redid the special effects for Star Wars. They redid the special effects for the intro for E.T.
Well, and they replaced all the guns with walkie-talkies. So, yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's true.
Didn't they take that back? Like, didn't Spielberg go like, yeah, that was stupid? Did he? Yeah,
I was totally high. I was kidding when I called my secretary. I did Shawshank Redemption, for goodness sakes.
But to answer your question, yeah, essentially what we in the animation and visual effects community are attempting to do is create awareness and sort of an act of solidarity, and everybody being united in this idea. One of the things I think that I personally want to make awareness for, and I think that this is something that is very important to pretty much everybody that works, at least on our level in the industry, is, you know, we're not making $1 million. You know, we're not rolling in dough. And I think people have, especially with visual effects, I think people have this image that, oh, so these rich snobs are losing their jobs too? Oh, too bad. No, that's not the case. They are not rich people who, you know, just because you work in a movie, it doesn't mean you actually get a cut of that, you know, what do you call it?
There's no royalties like what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so I think that's one of the things that we want to create awareness for is these are people that are working a regular everyday job just like everybody else. They're not making $1 million. They don't live in mansions. They don't, you know, go to hot tubs with celebrities or anything like that. That's not
wait, that's not at your barbecues?
Speak for yourself.
I was like this close to coming. I was like, I'm going to be at that barbecue. Wow, Will. What are you drinking, Will? What are you drinking?
But yeah, like the thing that upsets me is like too is like, you know, a lot of people think like it's an awesomely fun job. I mean, we it's tons of fun, obviously, to do something that. You know, like, you know, obviously I was doing it for free, like, and for fun before I got paid to do it. So there's that. There is a ton of amount of work that goes into it, a ton of passion and
sleepless nights
and sleeping at the studio.
You know, literally. Work. And, you know, and actually I think this would be a great plug for another animator, Alex Omlansky, freaking rock star animator. Seriously, he did pretty much everything for the El Jefe boss battle. Insanely good animator, and he
literally everything.
Pretty much everything. I think he did every single thing for that. And he besides Sly, and he you know, was in fact, I think one of his, he posted on Facebook or something. It's like, all right, I'm finally going to bed. It's been 36 hours that I've been animating. He literally would not leave his desk until something was perfect. You know, and I think that's something that, you know, I mean, I don't know if there's a misunderstanding in the world about us not doing a lot of work, but it is hard work. It's not, it is fun, but it is hard work.
You know? Well, you shouldn't have to justify just because you do what you love. Like that should, that shouldn't be something that you, I love what I do. So therefore I shouldn't be entitled to be compensated for it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Chris has been compensating by hating it. He hates it.
Oh, well, that's why he makes more money than all of you.
I think the big thing is it's like it's a trickle down thing, and I think what my point was is that like you work so hard for something, and especially people that excel so much at in a certain field, they shouldn't feel scared for their jobs all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
And pretty much everybody that's in this industry is.
Constantly has that mind
that, you know, that I could be jobless tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, I think it's not without reason that at least the companies that are doing this animation should be getting royalties off of these films, because while I can understand it would be a humongous endeavor to try and compensate everybody that was associated with the animation, but if the company itself is getting royalties, then that just bleeds down to everybody who works there. That means that that gives them more money to be able to keep people employed in between projects, and they're not sitting there scrambling for their next contract, like you said.
Absolutely. That, and in fact, that's sort of been my stance on this, is that that's kind of what I'm hoping happens with creating this awareness. And with, I mean, honestly, my main thing is I think that Hollywood really screwed up at the Oscars by even drawing attention. I mean, like, Samuel L. Jackson would not let them finish saying what, like, did you see that part?
Yeah, I didn't understand what was happening.
So Robert Downey Jr. was attempting to read the thing that said, all right, so, you know, the visual effects community and blah, 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 blah. And I don't even know what he was going to say. I can't pretend to be in the know. But whatever he was going to say, Samuel L. Jackson did not let him say it. He just kept cutting him off. No,
was it,
let's give him the award, dude. Can we just, Tony?
He was trying to read, there was something on the teleprompter about the visual effects.
Yeah, he was trying, I think what he was trying to do is do their little spiel where say, you know, virtually every movie, he even made like what seemed like an improv, comment about how just because a movie makes more money than anything, you know, popularity doesn't mean it should be acknowledged at the Academy, clearly. Basically saying that it's kind of pompous for the Academy to look at something like the Avengers and say that it is not artistic or artistic merit, when there are real artists working in a completely virtual world that are painting a picture, and yet all you have to do is make an animated film and you're nominated.
You know what I mean?
Like, when essentially Avengers, 80% of that film is animated.
Right, yeah. But it's like Aunt Mary Poppins.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what upset me about, like, and I didn't even see the Oscars, but from what I understand,
they're really big. They happened last Sunday.
They came out those gold statues.
Yeah. The neutered man.
But Ang Lee didn't thank Rhythm and
Blues,
right?
Yeah, no, he didn't.
Which, and that does upset me, because, I mean, man, but okay, when with Life of Pi, like, I haven't seen the movie either, but...
I can't speak with authority on any of this.
Yeah, it's great. But, I mean, I've seen the trailers, right? And what's the first thing you see? You see these amazing visual effects.
Oh, yeah.
That is what sells that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd say at least 80% of the awesomeness of that movie is Rhythm and Hughes visual effects.
Well,
and to not give them a thank you, especially knowing that they're going through bankruptcy, like...
I had made a comment the other day to somebody that nobody went and saw Avatar because James Cameron's such a brilliant writer. Like, I'm sorry, but there wasn't a single person who went to Avatar because they knew it was going to be a great story.
That movie.
Literally is like the human equivalent of a bug trap. You know? But the thing is, actually, we were talking about this before, that Avatar, we felt, should have been nominated for Best Animated Movie of the Year.
Sure. Yeah. I would vote for that.
I say that only partly kidding, because really...
No, you should be fully serious.
Yeah, you wouldn't have a problem with, for example, James and the Giant Peach being nominated for Animated Movie of the Year.
Yeah.
You know, but this movie, really, essentially, it was an animated movie with some humans in it.
Yeah.
There's hardly anything practical in that movie. Well, I can't say that for sure, because I didn't work on it.
No, you were right.
At the risk of pissing you off, I'm going to start playing Jaws on this subject. And I'm kidding. But what I do want to do is I want to say that I think that what would help build this awareness is that even if our listenership changes their profile picture to a green picture.
It's the green square. It's the green screen.
A green screen. That would even give you guys more of an opportunity to get your message, that it doesn't have to be limited to animators.
Absolutely, and that is
so
true.
If you agree with the politics of what you guys are saying, then you should be making your profile picture green.
One thing that I would add to that is to give an explanation, because I made mine green and thinking, oh, I'm showing solidarity within the industry. And then I had a bunch of people commenting, so what's with the green? Are you feeling like St. Patrick's Day early or something? So if you post it, you can either post it.
Yeah, this is horrible timing for you after Valentine's Day. And the freaking grocery store's already got cookies out. Yeah, this is bad news bears. You guys chose poorly on your chroma key. You need to...
But what's funny to me is actually it's exactly like the H&R Block logo. So
that's true.
Sending the H&R Block logo around and going, so solidarity, way to go.
He's either Irish or he's really into taxes. Which is also coming. Yeah, this is horrible timing.
All the way around.
We got to pick this up again in the fall. Yeah. That's what we got to do.
Can we do the Oscars in November?
What I would like to do now, and please, as much as I was kidding in that bit, if there is something else, I do think that you guys bring up a solid point, and it is something that no one is aware of, that level of injustice that's happening to these people that are putting in so much work on these things that we truly enjoy.
Because like you all said, I mean, you're doing sleepless nights. You're working for 36 hours at a time, and you're slaving over these things. And then I can't imagine that life where you're doing something non gratis, like, okay, I just want to help get this movie out, so I'm going to give it my best, give you every inch of my artist heart, and then to be laid off with no pay, and your company's going broke, and there's no repercussions. Like, I might as well just lived on the street for the past 6 months, because there's nothing that came of that for me.
Yeah, it is extremely frustrating, and yeah, I mean, honestly, if you let us, we will ramble about this for 7 hours.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't. I really don't want to. It's something that I agree wholeheartedly with, and it's something that I was unaware of. So that's what I'm trying to be here. I'm trying to be sensitive to it, but I understand that, it like anything, you are passionate about it, and it's also part of the bad part of my job here is that I need to kind of direct things. So tell me if I'm being.
Absolutely.
Is that okay? We're good. Everybody makes their.
What a jerk.
yeah, we're all exchanging dirty looks right now.
So a perfect spot to cut that off.
Snip.
Me being an a-hole, and man's trying to save jobs and and companies and fight for a just cause. And I go, yeah, but listen, we got a show to do here. So if we could just move along a little
bit. You became the man. That's the problem. What I did. Full circle. You've become the man.
My white skin shone true.
Not okay. I regret everything.
I took that out of here. That was so fun. So that was them talking about their experiences with Sly and some nerd rage. And then really interesting stuff. I really like that idea of, or not the idea of it, but I it was something interesting that came out of it organically, this whole idea of like the people doing special effects and the injustices that they're facing. And that's really interesting. So,
yeah, it's a bummer. I just can't imagine the heartache that would come with that, of doing that much work on a project and then not getting anything. I mean, I think of it now. We've got a wife and a kid, and if that happened to me, we'd be living at your house. I would have to come and move in with you.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that it's what, like I said, they're not even asking to say that. You know, Joe Schmo, who did Thor's left middle finger, needs to get royalties. What they're saying is that the companies need to be handled, because the company, it's a trickle-down thing. The companies handle the employees, and they take care of
them. Pay a fair wage for a fair work.
And I think that what they're trying to do, and this is the beginning of that movement, is that they're trying to say, hey, there needs to be better compensation for the special effects people.
This is the first time I think I've ever said this, but this is evidence of a unionless industry, because that would not happen in any union. That's period. Like, they would break that completely.
Well, and this is a conversation that would have been better served with them, but I really think that what it is it's, and I think he touched on a little bit, is that it's outsourcing.
Yeah.
More than it is lack of union, is that most of the animation, in my understanding, very uneducated, so please send me an email, guys, if I'm misspeaking here, is that a lot of it goes to Korea or someplace else. And then, so we have all these guys that are here, and I think, though, in my personal opinion, I think that there are examples of that if they were to unionize, not they may already be, but that could almost blow up in their face. What they're really trying to say is that, listen, we've got guys here that are very talented and deserve to be compensated, but the companies that they work for are having to undercut outsourcing companies in order to just get the contracts that they have. And so I think what we really should, the real thing that can be taken from this, is that we should be bombing Korea.
Yeah, that, oh gosh. it's interesting, though, when thinking of it in context of the Oscars, it's like, no matter what the entertainment industry, no matter what era we're in or whatever special effects, it's like there's always some controversy like this when films transitioned from silent to talkies, from black and white to color, from movie to television. Like, that was a giant, you and I, don't know this because we've always experienced life with a television in our house, but like when it became to the point where TV had been around for 10, 15 years, this it was a giant question whether or not to pull up the vaults and dump them on television. Like, these are movies. They don't belong on TV.
Yeah.
And now...
You're ruining them.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's like a no-brainer. Of course you're going to have movies on television.
Yeah.
But that was a giant growing
Virtually
pain.
Every episode of Anger Management on FX is preceded by Iron Man 2.
Exactly. And I just feel like... Now my degree is coming out. But it's so fascinating because we're dealing with a medium that has changed dramatically over 100 years, and it's still in this protozoic period where it doesn't look anything like mm-hmm. nothing about the industry looks like it did when it was first created 100 years ago, which only begs the question of like, where are we going? Like, right. what will it be like? And people have been doing this for generations now, and it's so different.
I think it's a solid example of the technology moving so fast that the ethics of it haven't caught up yet, where it's like all these guys are all of a sudden now they're it's getting more and more to where visual effects is carrying 60% of the movie or more.
Sheesh.
And actors are
you have TV shows just throwing special effects scenes in because they have a budget for it.
Right.
Like, well, we got to spend this money.
Right. And so the guys are just doing the work, and because they work for 24 hours, there's no time for them to go, hey, wait a minute. Like, we should be, hey guys, let's think long term here.
Like, yeah. I mean,
In what it is now, I think it's a fairly new thing, but it's happened so fast. I mean, if you think about it, we even talked about Jurassic Park. That movie's, what, 10 years old?
No,
am I crazy? Or 13? 18? 20?
Yes.
It's 20 years
old. I was
going
to say, you're about to hurt yourself.
No, but here's the thing, though, too, is that if you look at what was happening 20 years ago, to me, Jurassic Park was like the first kind of step into...
It was.
You know, computer and all that stuff. And then, you know what I mean? That's when it first started. And in only a span of 20 years, look at what we could do. I mean, I was watching
Special
Features.
And if you watch Jurassic Park now, it's painful.
Right.
You're like, oh, this was good.
They're re-releasing it in 3D, which I love in movie theaters. But I watched one of the bonus features because I got tired of watching Iron Man again and again with my kid. So I watched the special features just so he could see Iron Man or whatever. And one of the things they talk about is that they would build a digital environment, so they would animate, and then they had a guy standing in a room, in an office, mm-hmm. like that whole atrium scene when they fight Whiplash at the end, spoiler alert, he's standing and he's holding a little computer screen, and he's able to manipulate the camera and shoot that animated scene live like he's there on a soundstage.
Right, yeah.
And that's in 20 years that happened. I know that 20 years seems like a long time, but to make the jump from having a latex and then partially computer animated dinosaur to a complete virtual world that you're shooting a camera in like it's a soundstage is insane.
Well, and even take it down like 10 years ago when the first Harry Potter hit the theaters in 2001.
Never seen it.
Never mind. Well, that's been our show on behalf of my good friend Justin Worsham. Seriously, you got to tune in next week if you enjoyed this. I mean, Justin and I have said it a few times now. We really want to find people in the industry and get them telling their stories because I think it's fascinating.
I do.
And,
I do too.
And we're getting to talk some really cool people with a lot of passion. And I think next week we tap on a couple of things that I think kind of shifted my perspective and really made the night worth hanging out with them, to the stuff we talked with them about.
Yeah. So tune in next week more with Will Crewley, as he's going by now.
Yep,
not Matt. He dropped the Matt, which I think is a good move.
Since an hour ago when
Travis McGovern.
Just called him Matt.
Chris McGovern and Travis Howe. I apologize again for messing up your guys' names. But thank you again. Tune in next week. Give us a call, 408-228-4911. Send us an email to show@secondfunniespodcast.com. Don't forget to join the conversation at facebook.com/secondfunniespodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @secondfunniest. Also, don't forget to throw a like if you go to facebook.com/ I want Sly Cooper to have his own animated series.
So close. I want Sly Cooper in his own animated series.
In his own animated series. You throw a like up there. Already up to 1,000 likes
already,
not even a month.
That's great.
Awesome. Thank you guys for that. Continue to spread the word. On behalf of my good friend Kevin Miller, it's just words of saying, okay, bye. You ready?